Gami shook Esteban's hand at the head of the gangplank, descended to the patrol boat, and nodded to his crewmen when he and Katahani were aboard. The line was cast off, and the boat accelerated away from the tired freighter, its wake clean and white against the dark, salty water. Standing at the rail, Esteban made to wave at the Iranian vessel if any of her crew looked back, but it was as if they couldn't distance themselves from the Norego fast enough. The captain scratched his ample belly and watched the patrol craft vanish into the distance. When it was no more than a speck, a second man emerged from the superstructure. He was older than Esteban, with a fringe of thinning auburn hair wreathing his otherwise bald head. He had alert brown eyes and an easygoing demeanor, and while he'd done a good job keeping himself in shape, a slight paunch pressed at his belt line. "The microphone in your office needs to be replaced," he said without preamble. "You all sounded like cartoon characters sucking helium balloons." The captain took a moment to pluck wads of medical gauze from behind his molars. The fleshiness around his cheeks vanished instantly. He then peeled off the brown contact lenses to reveal startlingly blue eyes. The transformation from a down-on-his-luck sea dog into a ruggedly handsome man was completed when he removed his cap and dragged the greasy wig from his head. His hair was naturally blonde, and he kept it trimmed to a long crew cut. The stubble was his own, and he couldn't wait to shave it off, but that wouldn't come until they had cleared out of Iranian waters, just in case he had to play Ernesto Esteban, master of the MV Norego, again.
"Alvin, Simon, and Theodore, that's us,"
Juan Rodriguez Cabrillo said with a grin.
"I heard you had to hit the panic button."
There were hidden controls under the desk in the office that Cabrillo could use in a variety of situations. One of them summoned Eddie Sung, who'd been standing by to play the role of an ill-fated engineer, and activated a pump in the plumbing below the non-working toilet. The pump made the commode erupt like a volcano. Chemicals added to the water furthered the illusion by creating a noxious smell.
"Ensign Gami wanted to play Sherlock Holmes and have a look around. I had to discourage him,"
Cabrillo said to Max Hanley, vice president of the corporation, of which Juan was the chairman.
"Think they'll come back?"
"If we're here in the morning, you can bank on it."
"Then I guess we should make sure we're not,"
Hanley replied with a devilish look in his eye. The two men entered the superstructure. Juan led them to a utility closet packed with mops, broom, and cleaning supplies that apparently had never been used. He worked the handles of a slop sink as though he was dialing a safe. There was a distinct click, and the back wall popped open to reveal a richly carpeted hallway beyond. Gone were the utilitarian metal walls and cheap linoleum. The hallway was paneled with dark mahogany, and chandeliers along the ceiling provided warm light. Like the disguise Cabrillo had donned to fool the Iranian Navy, the Norego wasn't what she seemed. In fact, that wasn't even her name. By transposing the metal letters held to her bow and stern by magnets, the crew had created the Norego from her real name, Oregon. Built originally as a lumber carrier, the vessel had plied the Pacific for nearly two decades, hauling Canadian and American timber to Japan and the other Asian markets. The 11,000-ton freighter had served her owners admirably, but the ravages of time were getting to her. As with any older ship, she was nearing the end of her useful life. Her hull was starting to corrode, and her engines no longer worked as efficiently as when they were new. The owners placed advertisements in maritime trade magazines that they were interested in selling her for scrap, knowing their once-proud flagship would fetch a few dollars per ton. At the time, Juan Cabrillo was starting the corporation, and he needed a ship of some kind. He'd visited ports all over the globe, looking for the right one. When he saw pictures of the lumber hauler, he knew he'd found his freighter. He'd been forced to bid against three breaker yards, but he still managed to buy the vessel for far less than had he purchased a newer ship. He had no interest whatsoever with the vessel's cargo-hauling abilities. He wanted her for her anonymity. The Oregon then spent the better part of 6 months in a covered dry dock in Vladivostok, going through the most radical refit in history. Without changing her outward appearance, the vessel was completely gutted. Her old diesel engines were replaced with the latest cutting-edge power plants. Using a process called magnetohydrodynamics, the engines employed supercooled magnets to strip naturally occurring free electrons from seawater to produce a near-limitless amount of electricity. That power was then fed into four aquapulse jets that pushed water through a pair of gleaming vectored thrust drive tubes at tremendous force. The technology had been tried on only a few vessels, and since the fire on an MHD-driven cruise ship called the Emerald Dolphin, it had been banished back to laboratories and scale models.